John Cage was a composer, music theorist, writer, artist. He was a pioneer of indeterminacy in music, electroacoustic music, and non-standard use of musical instruments. Author and photographer James Kwasti will tell us about his new book entitled John Cage Was. The book combines iconic photographs of Cage by James with testimony that the author commissioned from people the world over, each asked to contribute their thoughts on Cage's influence on their lives and work with 100-word statements. These remembrances range from humorous to reverent and are from artists including Laurie Anderson, John Ashbery, Jasper Johns, Yoko Ono, Peter Sellers, Stephen Sondheim, Twyla Tharp, Michael Tilson Thomas, and many more. It's a great pleasure to welcome James Kwasti to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. It's an honor for me to be interviewed by you. You're just a wonderful interviewer.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you very much. This book is beautiful. It is, I certainly want to give you 99% of the credit, but I will give some credit to Wesleyan University Press, who just did a gorgeous job putting it together.
Well, actually, that's not exactly true.
Okay.
Well, you should credit the book designer.
Designers.
Yolando Cuomo.
They're the ones who put it together.
They're the ones who put it together.
Because it's beautiful.
It is
a
beautiful book.
It's actually gorgeous.
I'm very happy with it.
You did a similar thing with Merce Cunningham?
Yes, which was not nearly as beautifully done, which is why this book is such a pleasure for me.
It seems then somewhat natural that you would then want to do something like this.
Well, yes. I mean, when I did my book on Merce, which was in 1975, a long time ago, it was the first book anyone ever did on Merce, John was always around. And so I had many, many, many photos of John, which I had never done anything with. And I just began to feel like it's time I should. So I got my act together, and we produced this book more or less on our own and then presented it to Wesleyan, who was happy to accept it. So, but it's not really a Wesleyan product.
Right. No, they're the publisher.
Right.
When it comes to this man, and as you indicate in the book, you were around him a lot, right?
Yeah, for 5 years.
For 5 years.
Not more than that.
But for that period of time.
Yes.
And got a good sense. And what you wanted to do was to have people give you what their impression of his, but I think that the limitation is interesting, that the saying, okay, give me 100 words because I want this to be very encapsulated.
Right. I had a very traditional idea of what I wanted the book to be. It was Yolanda Cuomo, the designer, broke that apart. My idea was if I only had 100-word texts, I could treat them as little visual objects as opposed to a photograph. I had envisioned a photograph on one page and a little text on the next page in various shapes. And that was much too simple-minded, I think. It wouldn't have worked in the long run. And Yo calls herself Yo. She said, no, let's break this apart and do so. She's done all sorts of wonderful things with the text to make the book much more visually alive, I think.
What do you think people... Well, let me ask you what your impression of John Cage was, and how ultimately you look at this project. Because I'm the ultimate question I'll ask you is how surprised you were by some of the responses that you got.
Mm. Well, to go back to the original question, what sort of a man he was, John? People often say of someone, "Oh, he was unique." John really was unique. He was one of the most beautiful spirits I've ever met. And his influence on artists in all genres are basically mostly because of the person that he was, as well as the work he did. And he was very interested, oddly enough, in getting rid of his own personality in his work, so that much of his use of chance processes was used to break away from his own personal tastes. And that was a step that really freed many artists in visual arts, in literature, in music, to try and do the same thing. So his influence all over the world is immense, and it's not really just because of the music he wrote.
How is one able to distance himself from their own personality, especially as an artist?
It's not easy. And John Cage devised the use of chance processes so that You would think that, I know John is often referred to as a composer of chance music, which sounds, oh, that's easy, he can do whatever he wants. In fact, the processes he went through to write any individual music were so complex and so time-consuming and just took so much work that it's the farthest removed. But the results of those processes made the music fit whatever they dictated. And so, as far as John was concerned, it transcended his own taste because he was following these completely chance processes. Doesn't mean it was easy. It was very work-intensive.
Did he care about the public reaction?
He cared less about the public reaction than about the reaction of the performers who were doing the music. It was a great trial for him to be taken seriously by the performers, and that was the greatest agony of his life. He did a large concert called Concerto for Piano Orchestra at Town Hall, in which he rehearsed everything with each individual musician. When the performance came around, they just said, oh, we're going to do what we want. So they played nonsense, basically. And this was something that John confronted all his life, was getting the musicians to deal responsibly with the freedoms which John's texts gave them. And eventually, now today, that's not a problem. Musicians take his work very seriously. They do very serious performances. But it really, I think, it's only been the last 15 years that that's been the case.
Mm. So in going to the artists and commissioning from them these statements.
Right.
Do you get a sense, because I guess putting in that context, I guess I do get a little bit of a sense of that there was some bewilderment.
Yes, but not among the people that I asked to contribute to the book. Most of them are people who, in one way or another, revere John and
found... Well, certainly great respect.
Yes, respect and also gratitude, because many composers in the book talk about how whenever they run up against a problem they can't solve, they just think about John sitting there with a contact microphone making music out of a cactus, and they just feel liberated. And it's a way, they just find new ways to approach their problems.
So just that idea of making music out of a cactus. So, because it sounds funny, right? How do you do that? So when it comes to, as you say, the last decade and a half of this coming seriously, how do you think we have changed artistically and musically that allow that understanding?
I think it's a question of becoming accustomed to this approach to work, which is something that did not exist in the early part of the 20th century. And in fact, you know, I should say that the music you opened the segment with, which is one of his sonatas for prepared piano, John would look upon that music, which is certainly his best-known music, sort of the way Stravinsky looked upon The Firebird. He almost wished he never wrote it, because everybody said, oh, Stravinsky, you wrote The Firebird. And his style progressed so far beyond that he felt pigeonholed. John, in the same way, those pieces that we opened with are very, very early pieces when he was writing strict music, writing it down accurately, not using chance processes. So he's come a very, very long way from that kind of music.
On the end papers of the book, there is no musical notation. So mm-hmm. What period would this be from?
That was from the 1950s. That was actually the piece I referred to, the Concerto for Piano and Orchestra, which was a score made up of individual pieces for each instrumentalist, and nothing is traditionally notated. So it was very open to interpretation, how they wanted to perform what was in front of them as their piece of music. And it took years before they would react responsibly to that possibility of they can do whatever they want. The idea is not to do whatever they want, it's to do it whatever you want with what you're given by the composer. And that's a kind of a conflict which wasn't always resolved very successfully.
So if you see a traditional musical note and then there is a circle around it.
I can't explain to you what these mean.
With wine. Okay, all right.
I don't know.
But I don't know. So how anyone reading it would understand it, because you said act responsibly. You've used that term a couple of times. So I would tell you that if I looked at this And I would say, well, I want to act responsibly. I'm just not sure how to do that.
Right. So, you know, that's a question not being a musician myself, I don't know what the process is of making them understand what John wants. John tried to work with them personally all the time, whenever he could. But if I was a musician just presented with that score, I wouldn't know what to think.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't. And I don't know how that enlightenment occurs.
Talk a little bit about, because we're talking about the man, but I want to talk about your photography because it is beautiful
and thanks.
It's quite stunning. So the questions that you always ask a photographer, first of all, about access and trust and getting into that situation that allows you to take such intimate photographs.
That had mostly to do with John's personality. Merce Cunningham, who I started photographing, hated being photographed. It was very difficult and very edgy. John loved being photographed because that's who John was. He was open to the world. And as I say in my introduction, it was never an intrusion. John was accepting of my presence. He just loved the camera's presence. He loved interacting with the world, and that's who he was. Just yesterday, I was very disappointed to receive a note from Stephen Sondheim, who was gracious enough to give me a text. And because this book was never really reviewed in the press, I'm taking the extreme step of taking out my own ad in the New York Review of Books with Wesleyan in the fall. And because I have no reviews, I've asked contributors who wrote me texts when they got the book telling me what they thought of the book. I'm using those as the ads.
Sure.
And Sondheim wrote this wonderful, just very brief, "I just want to thank you for the absolutely gorgeous book." So I just wrote to him and said, "Mr. Sondheim, may I use your, quote, absolutely gorgeous book?" And just yesterday, I've got this very disappointing thing. Says, "No." Said, "I've never given a blurb for a book simply because if I say yes to one such request, I have to say yes to all or risk hurting people's feelings. Please forgive me." And of course, Sondheim's in a unique position. I think he is sort of God to so many people in
sure.
the theater world, me included.
But he did contribute.
Yeah, he did contribute.
And
yes.
and so that must have been quite fascinating to see, to obviously someone who is a musician, of understanding of putting John Cage into a context.
Right. Although in Sondheim's case, it's a little unusual because he admits that Cage was not really influential on his work. It would have been amazing if it was. Their work's so different in different spheres. But he did use the prepared piano to play one of his scores. Is called Pacific Overtures. It's based on Eastern music. And he made a prepared piano to play a song for his backers in a backers audition. And he said because none of them knew anything about Cage, they were very impressed with how clever he was to have come up with this means of preparing a piano. So it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek response from Sondheim. But he still wanted to contribute. I'm constantly getting letters from artists who are saying, "I wish you'd ask me. Why didn't you ask me?" You know, I suppose it's a nice position to be in, but you can't ask everybody.
What was it like to pair the photos with the statements?
Fascinating, and that was a real collaborative process between me and Yo, the designer, to decide what text would go best with what photo. Sometimes I feel we had wonderful success. Sometimes I feel it doesn't work that well. But that was really as much a visual, purely visual thing as it was a semantic and conceptual thing. I think we did pretty well.
Hmm. What do you think do you think about legacy of John Cage?
Me personally? No, because I'm not in that world, really. You know.
But this seems to add to it, right? I mean, this
I
seems
hope
to,
so.
To
oh, gosh, I hope so.
I mean, not legitimize, because obviously he didn't need that.
Didn't need it.
But it does put it together in a context that, mm-hmm. that allows you to think about legacy.
Right. And what I hope to accomplish by the book was that, you know, a lot of people still think of John as a kook. You say John Cage, and they say, don't want to listen to that stuff. And he was just... But when you see how many people the world over took him so seriously, and hopefully all I wanted to accomplish in my photos was to somehow reveal the spirit, the beautiful spirit of the guy. And I hope that I did. So people have told me they think the book does. I don't know if that's true or not. I hope so.
Well, it's absolutely gorgeous. The title of the book is John Cage Was.
The reason for the title is every contribution had to use that phrase, John Cage Was, in some way.
And they do. And it's absolutely gorgeous. James
Clostey's
new book is John Cage Was. James, thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure.
For sharing this morning. I appreciate
thank you.
It. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.